What's up, you guys, and welcome back to another episode of The Revolution of the Black Woman Will Be Televised. I am one of your hosts, Danielle Bailey.
And I am your co-host, Tamika Rhines.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back. That was a little flat, huh?
A little flat. I started off a little flat, so... What's up, you guys, and welcome back to another episode. I am excited about today's episode. Excited, a little nervous. But before we jump into today's episode, what are your thoughts about last week's episode, since we can put it out?
Yeah, so I shared it on social media, and my caption to it was, it's transparent, it's bold, it's honest, and... Mm-hmm. I've listened to it when it came out. I listened to it, I think, again on Sunday night. I've listened to it again yesterday because there's jewels in it, even for me. Mm. I know we put out the content unscripted, you know, straight from what we call the dome, straight from our minds, straight from our hearts. And the playbacks for me really helped me. You know, I get a little antsy, I get a little nervous, and maybe I shouldn't have said all of that. You know, I don't know how maybe one group of people will feel about, you know, this or that. And then I have to tell myself, it's unscripted. We genuinely say a prayer before this goes so that what we put out helps somebody. And sometimes that somebody may be us. So I feel like, even though I was nervous about it, I felt very transparent in real time about some things that I had recently come through that a lot of people didn't know. You know, a lot, it was a long time before I even started talking about some of those things, and definitely wouldn't talk about it on this, on a platform where it can go so far. So I think that we did what we were supposed to do.
Absolutely.
That is what I think about episode 7. I think that we did what we were supposed to do. I think one thing that's effective for people who are looking for answers in their dark times, even though you can go to a therapist, you can get coping skills, you can talk to somebody, you can use those tools. I think things can really be driven home when you have someone who is honest with you about, hey, I've been there, or I am there, or this is what helped me when I was in a similar situation. I think that is very powerful.
I think that for me, episode 7, like for me, episode 7 is the best episode that we recorded per my feelings. And it's just that, like, I felt like every time I listened to it, I just heard our heart. You know, and I think that the space that I'm in right now, like understanding feelings and understanding, like, I want to know your heart. What's in your heart? Like, let me hear your heart. And I think that for me, that's what it gave. And truth be told, like, I even want, I hope that some of my clients stumble across episode 7 as well, because I want them to see, like, they will have firsthand knowledge of me being in a therapist spot, them not knowing what the hell is going on with me personally. And to see me
be human too.
And to see, like, I hope that they would come stumble across that and be like, you was up in here helping me. And the person who I really want to come, and that, like I said, that was, that called and I was at the river. We know, like, she knows or whatever. And it's like, well, when I say she knows that, like, I was at the river. She knows that sometimes that I do go to the river, because that's her thing too. She goes to the river. And so, like, but just to see, like, your therapist was in this spot, she's still human, and she still was able to come out of it. And not only did she come out of it, like, she was helping you a while along the way, too. So, like, that's what I'm hoping that people really can see is our hearts, and see how God still was there with us in the midst of it.
There with us. Used us while we were in it and carried us through. It didn't look like it. It didn't feel like it.
Right.
But with reflection and correction, you can see that he was carrying you through. It reminds me of the Wizard of Oz.
Here she goes.
You know, Dorothy was going through.
She was. Come
Taken out of her home by a twister in a strange land.
Come on.
And then had the enemy on her back every step of the way, but she was called to help the tin man.
Come on. Uh-huh.
Come on, church. Yeah. She was called to help the lion and the scarecrow.
Come on. She still was like walking in her purpose.
She was still walking in her purpose. She was trying to get to her miracle.
Come on.
Of getting back home.
And but because they was connected to her,
they got a blessing. Oh, this a preach. This a preach.
Come on. That also goes to show you that there are divine connections. There yes. are people who, like, your purpose is so much greater than you, than your temporary
situation. Emotions, yeah.
You know, and so, like, I think that that's somebody I was working with today. They were saying, you know, I just feel like, she was like, I know, don't think that I'm crazy, but I think that we have a divine connection. I say, you're absolutely right.
Absolutely right.
I say, I don't think that you're crazy at all. I say, the people who I serve are absolutely connected to me, divine. I was like, so like, there's God. I said, I consider us to be in the circle, in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And in this circle, like, everybody plays a role and everybody plays a part to help God's people. I say, so yes, I say, so some of my clients, the majority of them are divinely connected to who I am with a gift.
Yeah.
Not necessarily just me, but the gift that's placed upon me can now speak to your situation. That's how we know that God has thought about us enough to be like, I'm going to place a gift in somebody and I'm going to connect you and it's going to speak to your broken places.
Angels on the earth.
Come on.
Yes. Angels in the earth.
Yes. Yes.
I love it.
So,
if it ain't blessed nobody else, it blessed me. And I know it's blessed other people. I've heard feedback about it. But that's just confirmation for me that transparency, even though it may be uncomfortable for us,
mm-hmm.
and we can be here and emotional, but still putting the content out, that it doesn't stop. It doesn't fall to thistles and thorns. It mm-hmm. falls to where it needs to fall. And like you said, let them who have an ear and a heart to receive it,
receive it. It's, for me, it's like, you know how we just keep, and I'm still trying to formulate the words of, you know how we say that the Bible is the living word,
mm-hmm.
and it's living truth and it's ever growing. I feel like sometimes that the podcast is like that right there. Like, it's ever growing. Like, it's all, every time I listen to it, I get something different.
Same.
You know, so like, it is, I'm not comparing it. I'm not saying that it's the Bible, but it's truth. And I guess that with truth, when truth comes,
it's levels to it. Yeah.
And
applications to it.
Right. And it's everlasting. Like, it's our truth. So that's what it is or whatever. So I don't know. Like, I was just like,
you're in love with episode 7.
I see it on you.
Y'all can't see her, but I see her face and she is big cheesing.
Episode 7 is it, you know? So, yeah, I just want us to do the recap of episode 7 before we jump into today's episode, which today's episode is kind of
A little heavy,
I will say this. So trigger warning to, you know, to everybody, especially to people who desire to be a mother, but you're not a mom yet. This episode will be going into that, where we're making preparations for our Mother's Day episode.
Yeah.
I think that us as Black women, we would do a disservice not to talk about mothers and mommies to be, mother trauma, and mom guilt and all of this and that other kind of stuff. So I feel like that's what these next couple of episodes is going to lead us into, is leading us into Mother's Day. So that way we can be of service and help.
Yeah.
So today's episode is going to be titled, I'm Not a Mommy, Now What?
Yowzer.
You know?
Just the emotions.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I feel them because I've had children, mm-hmm. Without complications with conceiving. I had some complications with delivering them, but they are healthy children.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot even grasp a woman, right. a Black woman, having to sit in the seat of, number one, I want to be a mommy.
Right.
And that season either hasn't come for me, mm-hmm. or two, I want to be a mommy and I don't have the ability to conceive. You know, it can go so many different ways, and mm-hmm. each way or each path that your life happens to take you in comes with a load of emotions.
Right. And not, I think that for me, because I'm not a mommy, it comes with a load of like just raw emotions, like what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Already.
That's all right. This is the real deal.
Right.
In the moment, transparency.
Like having those emotions for years and like what's wrong with me? Like from being in college, I ain't trying to get pregnant, being afraid to get pregnant. And then now it's just like, bruh, like maybe I should have, you know, but it's just that it's like, it's so many emotions when it comes to wanting to be, the desire to be a mom, and for whatever reason, you can't.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be, you know, not being able to find the right person. And I think that that's one of my big issues, is not being able to find the right person.
That you would want to share that with.
Yeah. Like that, and I remember like for years, like people would be like, you should just go and have a baby. I was like, with anybody? And I'm like, yeah, I'm like,
can't be talking to me.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's just like, you know, like I don't want to have a child with anybody. But then as the older you get, the desperation starts to sit in.
Oh my God.
The desperation of, like, man, I'll go to a sperm bank. If I, you know, if I want this to really happen, you know, like, it begins to be, then you're in a desperate spot to where, like, you are, like, I want to have a kid. And then dating and men knowing that they can also use that, too.
Against you.
Against you. Well, let's have this kid or let's plan. And now you got, what they say, sheep over wool closures or something like that. So, like, you're looking at things, you're avoiding the red flags or not noticing the red flags.
They become a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, wolf in sheep's clothing. And so you begin to avoid the red flag just because of what they have represented.
Yeah.
And you think that, yes, that's
he's halfway. Got what I want.
He's got what I want. He's halfway decent. And we're going to make this work. And it's just like, but then on the inside, he's a complete broken little boy.
Yeah.
And you didn't went down that road, but he even spoke the language of
the void in your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you're set up for heartbreak when you realize that this
ain't it.
This ain't it.
Yeah.
So it's just like you have all of those emotions. For me, being a single woman, let me say this. This is my account. It's from a single woman perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a married woman who, for whatever reason, don't have a child.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, I feel like that's a different level of hurt too as well.
It's another layer to it. Yeah,
it's another layer to be in a relationship and to be groomed. Like, we were groomed to be mothers.
Absolutely. Mothers and wives.
Right, right.
We were groomed in the role of mother and wife. We were groomed to fulfill that role and what that duty looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I only got bits and pieces from certain women of the joy that they got from doing that and how they mm-hmm. felt about it. And then the other people that I saw that was just fulfilling a role. This is just what I have to do.
Yeah, yeah. So then you begin to be like, okay, so I was groomed. I was taught. This is what I'm supposed to be as a woman. I'm supposed to be a wife.
So that becomes a part of your esteem. Oh, my goodness.
I'm supposed to be a wife. I'm supposed to be a mother. I'm supposed to have the 2.5 kids with the white picket fence. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to have the husband that comes. I'm supposed to take care of the house. I'm supposed to do this.
The societal standard.
And here I am.
Yeah.
Single woman. No prospect. I ain't gonna say niggas be trifling, but lot of them are, but you know, like, so like it begins to be like, so you didn't tell, this is the identity that you gave me.
As a young child. Before I can develop an individual identity, society and the way I was raised has already told me who I need to be as an adult.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is the identity that you gave me. So now that identity is...
not fulfilled.
It's not fulfilled. So...
by way of just life. Not that you are purposefully not wanting to date, not wanting to be married, not wanting to be in a relationship, not wanting to be a mother.
Yeah.
It's the circumstances of which life has had.
It's life. And then, you know, like, so you're not, so like that begins to affect your self-esteem. Like,
yeah.
Why not me? And then you begin to, I begin to look like, I would say my 20s was, I don't know, I think that my 20s were like the years that I was going through, but didn't even know it.
Yeah,
like I feel like I was going through the, I would say my, going towards my late 20s, going into my early 30s. In my early 30s is when I really started, probably about like 32, 33 is when I really start trying to heal some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I'm still trying to, you know, like chase this identity that society has given me. And I think that by the time 32 comes, 31, 32, yo, that's not your identity.
Wow.
So, like...
that's a whole healing road by itself. Because you've got to break it.
Yeah.
And then you've got to accept that this is not where I'm at by the age that society says I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to... I guess you got to go through some kind of self-acceptance.
Yeah. You have to go through self-acceptance. And who is it? I think Rachel, she hit me on to radical acceptance.
Radical acceptance.
Being able to accept that I may not be able to have children, or I may not have children. Like, I have to go through the period. And then me going through all of this at the same time of me losing my hair.
The alopecia.
Like, I realized that, well, I was diagnosed with alopecia around about 32, 33. No, it was in my 30s because I cut my hair at 33. So around this
all time, the same time.
All at the same time, I am going through with hair loss. That right there, a black woman in her crown. So I'm going through hair loss. I am dark skinned. I am a big girl. And now you don't have no hair and you don't have no man.
Oh, my goodness. Based on
what?
Standards in society. Standards that we're taught as young women.
Yeah.
What happens in the black community.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be a breaking point.
That is like all of that. So like, I don't know what made me begin to, because at the time I wasn't in therapy. I don't know what made me start working on myself.
I remember a picture of you. There was a picture of you. You went on a cruise.
Yeah.
You had on a swimsuit and this was the first time you were putting it out on social media. Everybody will see and know at one time, this is me.
Yeah.
My bald head. I have struggled with alopecia. I've done everything that I could do to remedy it. And this is just me. And that looked like radical acceptance on the outside, but you were already on doing the work on the inside.
Yeah. I've been doing with my hair. I was doing the work for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like I just got tired. I was exhausted. You remember like how you were talking a little bit earlier about like your client, like she was just exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And I was exhausted of the hair, the weaves, the hair weaves, wigs and weaves.
Probably the emotion too of just watching it come out.
And watching it come out and then going like, then still being traumatized, like, because like at one point I was getting like sew-ins. And so, like, the lady would, I can still to this day on my scalp sometimes, I can feel the needle and thread. You know, like, a lot of people probably don't feel the needle and thread going through because they have had it. But, no, I can feel the needle and thread on my scalp, or having a flare-up because I had, like, small little red bumps in my head that were flare-up. And it was just, like...
it was tender.
Tender. Just so much. So, like, it just got to a point to where, like, fuck this, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna, and I was like, I remember telling myself, ain't got no man. It don't even matter, sis. Like, we finna cut, just cut your hair and it's gonna be okay. And I remember my mom was like, my mom and my hairstylist, we can cut ours too.
Oh.
I was like, for what? Y'all hair is gonna grow back. I was like, girl, we don't need to do that. But I would say that in that moment when I went to go and get my hair cut that day, like, and there was a lot of people.
I remember.
It was a lot of people in the shop. Nobody had ever really saw my hair and how bad it was with the losing my hair. So when the lady had, because my hairstylist, she would always give me at the end of the day, she'll give me at the beginning, or she'll just do me on her off days. So nobody saw my hair. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody has really ever seen my hair, how bad it was.
Yeah.
And so I remember, like, her taking out the weave, and I was like, I'm cutting it today. And so everybody in the shop, when I came from the bowl, the looks.
Oh, my goodness.
The looks from everybody in there. Oh, my. Like, I can hear a pin drop when I walked in. And so it went from pin drop to, I was like, yep, we finna cut it. So she blew out whatever little hair I had left, and she started cutting it. And it went from, oh, my God.
You look so good.
You look so good. And it went.
Baby, because you rocked that goddamn bald head.
It went from, oh, my God, to, oh, my God, you look so good. Yeah. Like, you really look good. And, you know, like, and so it just, but it wasn't, it's like that type of rattle. I didn't know what it was. At that moment.
Until you experienced it?
Until I experienced it, then I knew that it was radical acceptance. And it was because I had began to, I was exhausted, and I began to accept my destiny. Like, God, you knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to accept it. And when I accepted it, I loved it.
And you have rocked it ever since.
Every since. And And people now, they're like, damn.
You're an inspiration now.
Your inspiration are either like, I don't wear wigs right now. Like, I haven't worn a wig since, I think it was 2017 or 2018 or whatever, when I cut my hair, because of the shame that's attached to them.
Yeah.
I was hiding when I wore wigs and weave.
Oh, my gosh. That's a level of internal work.
So for me, it's like, it's just not a simple, just go put that on. No, it's not there, because it's going to begin to put me back into that dark place of hiding and shame. And so I begin to, if I want to,
That is so deep. And the fact that you knew at that moment that you were making a choice of radical acceptance, it's like, once you get there, you can't go back.
Right.
You would be doing yourself a disservice to go back to the mindset that you had to have to survive
right. The
3 years of trying to cover it up.
Right. So, like, just going from there and now going into other areas, and I was like, shit, if I can accept my hair being gone. Like, I was already working on my self-esteem. The hair loss, when I finally cut that off, this is it. Like, you know, so now let's start working on other areas that you kind of need to start accepting and moving forward with that.
And this is where the not having children.
This is where the not having children started coming to life and started coming to, like, not allowing people to talk about, oh, you don't have any kids,
yeah.
Or me not, you know, at first when people would say, oh, you don't have any kids, or you need to go have kids, I would try to laugh it off, and I would, you know, like, not say anything after that. Man, fuck you. I mean, so you don't have no kids. Why you don't have no kids? The same reason why you got them kids out there that you ain't taking care of, that your baby dad ain't helping you with.
Shots fired.
When I say it went from, oh, no, now I'm calling you, the same reason why your child up for capital murder.
Oh.
Don't come for me. Because I'm going to unleash
you. You know, this is the issue with, as you said in the beginning, societal standards, family standards, what you should be, who you should be, what you should have, who you should be with, is that it becomes a known language, a known dialect that nobody has consideration.
Yeah.
Nobody even stops to think about what your situation may be. They don't stop to think about, should I be sensitive about this? It's so generational that it is second language.
Yeah.
It's actually primary language.
Yeah.
They don't have, or they haven't taken the time to consider, you know, what if what I'm saying is hurting them? Right. It's hurting her.
And then that the entitlement.
Yeah.
That I owe you an
explanation.
Answer, explanation of what's going on with my body, what's going on with my life. Like, I don't owe you anything.
Right.
I don't owe you nothing.
The bigger question is, why do you feel so comfortable?
Right. You know?
Yeah. But most people don't talk about that.
So, like, you see that, like, it's just like, come on, y'all. Like, read the room. Like, I'm well in my 30s. And if we're at a family gathering, I'm well in my 30s. And my 17-year-old cousin's number having children. You know, like, my cousin's children are having children. Read the fucking room. Yeah. Like, if I could, I would.
Yeah.
You know?
And even if I could and I didn't want to, that is my choice. And I still don't owe you an explanation about that, about the choice that I'm having with my body.
And then it begins to be, I know that at one point in time, because I'm the type of person is, I'm not going, if the guy is not who I think that I need him to be for my family, I'm not going to bring him home.
No.
So I have never brought home a guy.
Wow.
So then that begins to lead my family to say, oh, she gay.
Lord have mercy.
I was like, how y'all get me?
How y'all put these things together?
Oh, she gay. And nothing wrong, nothing against, you know, my LGBTQ people, nothing against that. But how could y'all come up with, just because I haven't brought anybody home? And it's like, because you people, y'all are hard. Y'all will run. I remember when my high school college boyfriend came, and this is what really, I said I'll never bring home anybody else. So he came home with me, and so we talked or whatever, and so my mom seen this boy around town and told him that if you ever hurt my daughter, I'm going to kill you.
Mama.
That boy stopped talking to me.
I'm sure he did.
He didn't say why until years later. He was like, yo, your mom? And I was like,
your mama threatened my life.
Your mom is what kind of like did it for me. And I was like, what you mean? And I was already off in college, and he was here in Alexandria. And so he was like, your mom threatened me.
And my goodness.
Like, I know you're lying. He was like, no. And then when we tried to talk again, that girl still came. I was like, look, leave that boy alone. But like, I was just, and I remember I was so heartbroken over him in that situation. And it was shortly after, like when I stopped talking to him, I remember I was like, I failed the class because of him in college. And I think that's kind of like just set me up or whatever with dating for a long time. Should do a dating episode. Well, I was like, I would never date in college. Because I almost jeopardized like my livelihood because I was so heartbroken. And I just didn't fail a class. I got an F. Brought down my whole GPA.
Yeah.
And that right there.
And that was a determining factor for you that until I'm sure that this is the guy that I can foresee a future with, that I'll bring him home.
Yeah.
And probably have to give him a disclaimer. And then have a talk with the family, like, hey, don't do that.
Don't do that. And then, like, now.
There's
like,
a way you can say we care about Danielle without threatening his life.
Right. So, like, you know, you got all of these factors in there. And it's just like, I'm just like, yo, like, I can't with y'all. So, like, I think all of this play. This is my journey of, like, not being a mommy.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Because I have, because you really got the date. And, you know, some of you guys,
May not be dateable.
May not be dateable. And then I've gotten into the mode of protecting myself. And then I know recently, within the last year, within my last year of therapy, I said to myself, I was not ready to be married.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I was in a, and I remember coming to that conclusion with my therapist is because I was like, I don't think, and I think it was me working in therapy with my therapist, learning more about myself, doing marriage counseling with other people, and understanding what it really takes to be
to work a marriage.
I was like, I'm not in a place to be married right now. I'm not ready.
You don't have the capacity.
I don't have the capacity to be that for that other person when I can barely be that for myself. I said, so I'm not ready to be married. And I had come to terms to accept that too.
Wow.
Like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that. And it is now, it's like, now I'm coming to the point this year with saying, okay, I think that we're ready now. We've grown more, we've matured more, had experience with, you know, just with therapy, understanding more about yourself, able to articulate your emotions and how you're feeling. So, like, I feel like now I'm ready to really and truly, like,
entertain the idea of dating and marriage.
And really ready, yeah, to entertain the idea of dating and marriage or whatever. And so it's just like, okay, that comes with dating and marriage and boo this. And my therapist was like, whoever he is, he was like, yeah, it's going to happen quick. I'm going to shout out my therapist. Shout out to Dr. Antoine Butler. That's my boy. He is a pastor, but he's also a therapist. Y'all, I'll be cussing on. I'll be like, man, bro, let me tell you. He'll be like,
Nod and smile.
Nod and smile. And then, you know, like, I feel like he gives me hope. And I think this is why I feel like therapy is so important for us, is because I remember telling him last week, I was like, you know, and this is something that I really worked on. I've come to terms with I may not be a mom.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him last week, like, I'm coming to terms with the fact that being a mom may not be what God has put on this earth for me to do.
Then how does that make you feel about God?
It makes me feel I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I am a little mad. I am mad with you.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie and be like, oh, I just, he's God. No, I don't understand it. I am a little mad. Why am I not married? Even though I know that I wasn't ready, but why am I not married? Why I don't have kids? Why I don't have the house and a two-picket fence?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm mad at that part, but I'm also learning in this age and stage that God still knows what's best for me.
Ooh, yes. And that's a part of radical acceptance, because you're not only radically accepting yourself where you're at, you're having to radically accept the plan and the vision that may not be the plan and the vision that you've had.
Right.
For yourself.
Right. So, and I think that's another, like, that's why my therapy sessions have been so, like, needed. And I just remember telling him, I was like, and I think this goes back to last year in May when I talked about, the episode 7 about me being so mad with God, and God, like, you didn't answer my prayers and I'm mad, and God told me to get up and you need to go. And he told me to go be about my father's business.
Yeah.
So, like, now I'm taking that strength, that learning experience, and I'm applying it to this one. That, like, even though part of me desire to have children, but then you begin to look at stats and being at my age and, you know,
you talking about, like, health risk,
the children coming out with birth defects or handicaps. So you, like, I got all of this, but then I'm reminded of Hannah.
Yeah. Those, like, encouraging Bible stories.
I read that, like, about how she cried out to God.
Mm-hmm.
And how she was mocked by her husband's other wife because she couldn't have kids, mm-hmm. and how, like, from a deep sorrow, I was like,
that's me.
Hannah number two right here. Hannah number two. And so, like, just, but then God gave her, what, Samuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
God gave her Samuel.
And then she had to give Samuel back.
And she had to give him back.
Yeah.
But then she goes on to have other kids, but you begin to, what you birthed was this great man of God.
Mm-hmm. In the season of which it was due for her.
Right.
Ooh, wee.
So it begins to be like, so accept that. So now I'm at this point. I remember telling my, like I said, told my therapist last week, I'm coming to terms with the fact that I may not be a mommy. I may not be a wife too. Even though I have those desires, I say, so I'm coming to terms with that. I say, but I'm still going to be about my Father's business.
Wow. I honestly believe that God will reward you.
And that's exactly what my therapist said. He said, because of that.
Your determination. So you had to make a decision.
Yeah.
And then you had to get determined about it, that regardless of my heart being broken about voids not being fulfilled in me, I'm still going to do your will. I'm still going to do it your way. I'm still going to carry out the kingdom vision that you've given me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like all of heaven need to come down and celebrate.
You know, like,
shower,
right?
You with blessings that overflow.
So I'm still like, and
faithfulness.
And like, just when he said that, he was like, and that's why God gonna honor your request.
Because you're still faithful to his vision.
Still to this. See, he was like, that's why God, he was like, I'm just waiting on the guy to come. And he, and like my therapist, he's like, I'm just waiting on him to come. He gonna come in. And like, I do have visions and like, I do have like dreams. Like, I don't know if it's visions or dreams. I don't know what it is. But like, I know that I'm going to, whatever it is that I'm doing in life for God, it's going to be great. And it's going to be with the masses of people around. And I have the desire to, as I go out there and I go and do whatever it is I got to do to help God people, my husband is going to cover me.
Wow.
That's the type of level of desire that I have. That my husband will be on the side of me, covering me in prayer, praying.
Which means
over
he would have to be aligned with the kingdom assignment.
Absolutely.
Ooh, that's big.
Yeah. So this will be our kingdom. And he doesn't have to be in the front. He can stand the back. He's not insecure. And I still respect him as my husband.
Yes, ma'am. I hear order. Yeah. Right. I hear order.
Don't let this clout fool you. I got to go talk to this man.
My man.
my man. And I'm going to see what he says.
Yes. Ooh, that's in order.
You know? Like, I'm going to go and see what he says, because he is going to have my best interest. He's going to be seeking God
on our behalf.
On our behalf. So, like,
there's nothing more sexier than that.
Come on, right? Like, I'm over God.
Maybe we'll gladly submit.
Come on. And they talking about black women don't submit.
Shoo. Baby, us strong women.
Come on.
Strong black women. We're going to take a little sidebar here. We're going to get back to mother. We wait to be relieved.
Yes.
Like, we want to be the lioness.
Yeah.
We don't want to be the lion. We don't want to protect the pride, the pack.
Yeah.
We don't want any role that we were not divinely given. The only reason we operate outside of what, where we're supposed to operate as women, is because we do not have a choice.
Right.
So some women, I will say, get hardened, get bitter, mm-hmm. you know, get cold, you know, decide that they're never going to attempt to date or marry or whatever the case is, that their hearts were broken. And that does happen.
Yeah.
And then you have some women who choose to then dog men out, or, you know, just treat men like trash. It does happen.
Yeah.
But for those of the strong women who are carrying the load for whatever reason that they didn't have a choice, we do await the women who are doing the healing work.
Yes.
From whatever they've been through as children or whatever they went through in relationships, you get to a point where you're like, baby, I don't want to be the leader.
Come on.
Wasn't designed to be the leader.
Come on.
So as soon as my king can come and relieve me of these duties and take over, we gladly, humbly.
Come on.
Submit. And it happens naturally.
This.
You don't have to tell a woman to put down her cloak. It naturally comes off.
Yeah, it does. And I am just yet waiting. Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Waiting for him to
positioning
come.
Myself.
Yes. Yes. Doing what I need to do to make sure I am aware about Danielle. I'm aware about self. And, you know, and God has even shown me, and this is why I got to get my whole, I'm working on getting my life together. God has even shown me, now this has been dreams and visions,
mm-hmm.
where I have to lose weight.
Really?
And then when we come back from season two, we're going to do like a whole little, like health shows and stuff like that. Because I remember in the vision, I was smaller.
Oh, wow.
I was much small. I was smaller than what I am today. And I remember just being in a room. It was like a room full of women. And I was talking. And I was, of course, just flying like I wanted to be. And I was smiling. So that lets me know that this body.
That reminds me of a sermon by Mike Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he said that God can only take him where his body. He would only take the ministry where his body can
go.
Could
physically go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's just like, just all of that.
So, tell me this. How does somebody support, you know, because I'm a friend that has children and can often get into a rant about venting about children, which mm-hmm. I now think could be offensive mm-hmm. to a woman who wants to have children. Or even if I'm not venting about my children, talking about how my body has changed and I got mm-hmm. stretch marks and this and that, superficial things that we take to heart, consciously take to heart, like, mm-hmm. you know, it messes with your self-esteem when you got this food plot. It ain't going nowhere, no matter if you do 1,000 crunches a night. It ain't right. going nowhere, unless yeah. you maybe have it surgically removed, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. How does that make a woman who wants to have children or who's unable to conceive or that season hasn't come, when you hear a woman who has children who maybe complains or vents in what she feels like is a safe space, mm-hmm. and then how does that person support you or meet you where you're at?
I would say part of that is, I would say with our relationship, that's what I would base it off of. I don't feel any kind of way when you talk about, you know, your kids and stuff like that and venting about them. I don't. I know that I adjust.
Mm.
I adjust to when, I adjust to your schedule. And I know, like, I remember one time when I was going through, when I was in Mansfield, like, and I would know if I needed to talk to you, I would have to talk to you on your way to work after you dropped off the kids.
Wow.
Or on your way to, like, home, or, like, you have 15 minutes, and I better make this 15 minutes count, because that's when I'm able to have my friend uninterrupted from her. So for me, I've adjusted.
Wow. You know, I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, because I don't want, because when you're home, you're home. And I remember one time we talked, and it was after the kids had went to sleep. And I was just like, oh, my God.
I got my friend. Like, I got my friend.
Like, oh, my God. And it was longer than 15 minutes. And it was so,
I
like.
I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew that I had to adjust. I knew that I couldn't. I mean, I can be on the phone with you, but you're not getting my full time and attention. The
right.
kid's not getting my full time and attention. Right. You're just scattered brain.
Right.
So I get it now that you're saying it, but I never knew the experience on your end.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I knew to adjust, and that's with a lot of girls in the sister circle. Like, you know, you adjust to what they to
the
what
life
they have,
changes.
To life changes, and I remember, like, as I began to understand how I wanted to receive support. I mean, we was at your house, and mm-hmm. I was like, I needed your undivided attention. I needed you to. So that's why I would never call when you have your kids, because you can't give me your undivided attention.
Yeah.
And I know that. So it's like, it's almost like, take what you can get without causing such an inconvenience.
Wow.
Yeah. So for me, that's what it was. Take what I can get without causing such a big inconvenience. But if I know that I needed to talk to you, you would talk to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or whatever. So
I know sometimes I've said in our group, yeah, I can load these kids up. we can be on the way.
We can be. So for me, that's kind of like how I've done it, and I'm okay with it. Like,
thank you for that. Ooh, that makes me tearful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So like, and it's like, so I think that you receive the level of support from your friends with what they're capable of giving, you know.
And you have to adapt along the way in life.
Mm-hmm. So I'm able to when I remember when Kim had called me, like, I can get up and go.
Yeah.
Anytime. Like, only thing that may stop me is freedom.
Yeah.
You know, but for anything else, y'all have kids or whatever. So like, I'm the type of friends, if you need me there in the moment, no problem. Let me work this thing out. I'm there. Cause I can.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I'm sorry. I'm crying, child, but that is beautiful.
Yeah.
I just never knew it from that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
That the adaptations that you've had to make over time for my life circumstances, our friendship had to go through a few things,
mm-hmm, and that's just
that I wasn't just consciously aware of.
Right. And I don't think that you, like I said, like you have kids, you have to do this, you have to do that and stuff like that. And I think that's with all of us.
Does it ever feel like a slap in the face when you maybe see people with children or people who mistreat children? And I ask that because while I was pregnant with my first child, shout out to Attitude,
mm-hmm,
I got pulled to the Women's and Children's Hospital. I was working in Rapids Regional Medical Center, staff shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I was pregnant, I was working with mamas and babies. Babies were being born addicted to drugs. And so my social work role in that was to call and make a report to DCFS.
Yeah.
And then also let mom know, you know, this is what I have to do. You know, baby's meconium came back positive. You're mm-hmm positive. And most of the time they were combative. You know, yeah, that's a lie. The test is wrong. Knowing that they had did drugs while pregnant. Mm-hmm. Some form of drugs while they were pregnant. Sometimes they were prescribed and they couldn't make it without it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always a black and white thing.
Right.
But I still had my duty. My mandated duty was to report it anyway and then let DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services, do the investigation,
right,
make their determination. And so when I was pregnant, doing all that, going through all that, I was trying to do everything right.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to do everything I could to have a healthy baby. I didn't do drugs anyway.
Yeah.
But seeing that babies, even if there was a mama who didn't do drugs, who had a preterm baby or
yeah
couldn't carry, there still was a lot of death and dying in a children's hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I was following all these apps. I was eating all this stuff that you're supposed to eat at certain times that you're pregnant, have her. And then the day we're supposed to go home from the hospital, the doctor comes in looking frightened and saying, I'm going to have to send her to ICU.
Yeah.
I think whatever's going on may be fatal.
Mm.
And so losing it,
yeah.
Completely losing it. I didn't know day from night, you know, people were texting, you know, let me know when you get home, we want to come see the baby, and me not having the words
yeah
or even the thought to say we're not going home or she's yeah not going home, and not being prepared for questions, you know, it was
yeah
just so much at one time. And I remember going up to the NICU, seeing babies that I had just worked with their mamas on, still in the NICU, still
yeah
fighting for their life, still withdrawing from drugs,
right,
and feeling like, how could this be when I did everything right? You know, feeling like that was a slap in the face. So that's where that question comes from. When you feel like you're going through life and you're trying to do the right thing, you're trying to serve the kingdom, you're
right
trying to, you know, carry out the vision that God has given you, no matter how hard it is, and then for you not to have the desires of your heart given to you.
Mm. I don't know if I feel like it's a... I feel like it's unfair.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's unfair that I haven't, and then lately I've been in this mode to where I'm trying to rationalize like my behaviors. Well, maybe if I would have did this, then
yeah
I can do that.
Yeah.
I could have had that, or I could have. So like I've been in that mode a little bit too, like rationalizing my behaviors and stuff like that. But I feel like that it's, I do feel like it's unfair.
It's just unfair.
It's just, yeah. Like, I don't, that's all I can give you. Like, I feel like it's unfair to me to, you know, like, especially when we start talking about, like, relationships and stuff like that, especially with what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Helping other people in their relationships.
I mean,
God. Come on, big dog.
Come on, big dog. Like, we up in here doing some work. Y'all, and I just want to say, and I want to put out this short little side note right here. Stop saying y'all would not go to a marriage counselor because she's single. Like, that wow. right there, just because she's single doesn't mean that she does not have the skills. He or she doesn't have the skills to help you yeah. in your marriage. Like, I hate that when people say, oh, I'm not going to them because they single. They can't keep a man or they can't.
That's so ignorant. And that's so ignorant. It's like saying I'm not going to a therapist who has a therapist. I'm not going to a doctor who sees a doctor.
Like,
that's so, the most ignorant thing ever.
So, but people like really say that. But,
oh, I know they do.
But like, if you've been in, if only y'all have been in my marriage counseling sessions, because it's not about what I've been through in my marriage or giving you personal advice. Like, I'm not giving you personal advice from my own experience. It's that I'm helping you seeing what it is that you're going through. And a lot of times people don't need advice from your experience. People need to still
a safe space.
A safe space, and they need to work with the emotional trauma, emotional baggage, the insecurities that they have. That
which is the problem usually in the marriage.
You know, you brought that into the marriage now, and the marriage has heightened it. So, like, it's me doing a lot of that or whatever. But I said that to say, like, I've done some amazing work with couples. And so, that has, I think that right there also real.
Does that feel unfair?
It does. Sometimes it does feel unfair, but sometimes it feels like it's a revelation that I wasn't ready.
Wow.
When I start really working with my couples heavy, I realized that I wasn't ready because what I was challenging them to do.
I wouldn't do it.
You gonna do that for that man that you have? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't in the place to say, I'm telling this woman, I need you to really and truly, like, break off some of this emotions that you're having. I really need you to humble yourself. You know, like, I really need you to do some of these things right here. I really need you. Yes, he done pissed you off. Yes, he done made you mad. But I still need you to serve your husband.
Yeah.
Well, you gonna do the man?
We ain't talking about me.
Would you do that? I ain't married. Yeah, then I throw that out there. But like, I wasn't in that space. But now I'm in a space to where, yeah, I still will. So like, sometimes it's cool. It's cool that sometimes it's cool and then sometimes it's not.
I wonder if on the back end, spiritually thinking, that this may be your preparation.
I think so. I think that this is most definitely a part of my preparation for, like, I get to see firsthand.
Right. Unlike some of us who didn't learn until after divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I get to see firsthand, and it's not my heart.
Yeah.
It's not my heart that's online. Now, my heart does go out to my clients, and I do think that, you know, shit, all of us be up in here crying sometimes. Or whatever, but it's just that, like, I learn from them. I know what I want. I know what I'm willing to accept. I know what I'm not.
Yeah.
So it's just, and my heart is not on the line. That's all I can keep saying. My heart is not on the line, but I'm learning valuable experience. So, like I said, sometimes it's extremely good, and then sometimes it's just like, dang, God, like,
where's my partner?
Where's my partner? I'm over here willing to make the sacrifices. I didn't got off my high horse that I was on.
My friend had a chip on her shoulder, y'all.
Baby, these people couldn't tell me nothing, okay? So I'm like, now I'm just like, okay. And I remember when that man told me, shut up.
And you shut up.
And I shut up. That man told me that.
That's an experience that you can take with you.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like, if I remember the scenario correctly, he said it in the space of authority.
He did.
And he spoke it at the right time with the right tone, because you tell somebody, You tell a black woman to shut up. You really almost any woman, like that's coming back with an attitude.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That man said.
So you have the ability to submit. We have the ability to follow a leader. It's just timing. And is that written for me? Yeah. Is motherhood written for me in this life?
Right. In this. And I'm glad you said that, in this life. Is motherhood written for me? And so
you're coping with, what if it's not? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not. How do I accept that? I've already made a decision that I'm going to accept it if that's what the Lord has for me. Mm-hmm. I've already made a decision, and I'm determined about still carrying out what the Lord has for me to do in this life for His kingdom. And I think that's your now what?
That's it. Continue to go through the journey.
Wow. Have your feelings.
Yep.
As they come up, mm-hmm. and continue to do your work.
So, like, that's for anybody that's out there. That if you've gotten this far, because we is going on an hour.
Oh.
If you have gotten this far, how do you?
What is the now what?
What is the now what? How do you make it through this? What do I do? And it's really coming to terms that this may not happen, but still being about. And I think that people say, oh, you lack faith.
I live in reality.
I'm accepting that this may, I still believe that I believe in God's will.
Yeah. Over mine.
And that right there is not a lack of faith. That is saying that God's will, whatever His will is, because I don't know it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that I believe in it. And so what you do is you begin to accept it. You know, you work on accepting it. You feel your emotions. You tell God about them. You pray. You get other people to pray for you. You cry about it. You journal. Like, whatever it is. Like, it is a process.
To cope through it.
Yeah, it's a process.
In a healthy way.
And then one day you're going to look up and you're going to say, okay, I'm still about my Father's business. I'm still about this kingdom work that He has me to do, because I'm still going to get joy. And even in the midst of this, my heart, you can have two conflicting emotions.
Yes.
My heart can be broken because I'm not a mom or I'm not a wife, but my heart can also be full of joy because I'm able to help the people who I help.
Yeah. You find your passion and your purpose in other things.
Yeah.
While still having a void.
And just understanding that that's life.
Amazing. This is an amazing episode.
Yeah. So that's all we got for y'all wonderful people on today, y'all. Thank y'all so much for rocking with us today and listening. I really and truly appreciate it. Thank you for hearing my heart.
Yes. We'll talk to you guys again next week.
Bye.